From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. The federal government is backing lenders' plans to freeze payments on some adjustable-rate mortgages for 5 years. That's good news if you've never missed a payment, and if your loan isn't one resetting by year's end, and if you can show you can pay your mortgage once rates do go up after the freeze. So what if that's not you? And what about everyone else? To get some of those answers, we've got Keith Reed. He is an economics reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Keith, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tony. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Listen, this relief plan applies to people who have been on time with their adjustable rate mortgages every time. And as we pointed out just a minute ago, there are some other restrictions for who qualifies, including your credit score and the bank that holds your mortgage, the whole program being voluntary. So it may be easier for us to begin with who this plan does not apply to. And that's a lot of folks, isn't it?
It does not apply to the vast majority of people who are in subprime mortgages, many of whom are already in trouble. There are some estimated tens of millions of people who are in these types of mortgages who are either in default or are nearing default or are having trouble making their payments, or who definitely will be having trouble making their payments either after the year ends or even some of these rates will reset before December 31st. And so you can imagine that the universe of people who are eligible for some of this relief under this plan is a lot smaller than the universe of people who are eligible.
Well, you know, Keith, one complaint from people who are struggling to stay in their homes but who can stay for now is that this bailout is unfair to them and that they might have been better off to be less responsible in order to take advantage of this offer had they known it was coming down. What about them?
Personally, I think that's a bit of an argument that rings hollow in the face of what I believe to be a better argument there, to be made that, you know, there are many people who could not buy homes during the housing market run-up, largely because there were people who were willing to get into these mortgages who knew that they couldn't afford them, or because of some unscrupulous behavior on the part of lenders lending money for homes that they knew that people couldn't afford, and that the people who are really hurt by this are going to be those who yet won't be able to afford a house, who won't see any relief in the cost of a house, and who won't see any relief in terms of rates overall for people who qualify going down anytime soon.
You raise a very good point. I want to follow it up with this, because last week President Bush said of the crisis, and this is a quote, "Some lenders made loans borrowers did not understand," end of quote. Now, there's talk of people who could have applied for a regular loan, Keith, but got a subprime loan instead because they felt steered into that decision by lenders, as you just made reference. How much control do individuals have over their loan decisions?
Individuals have great control over their loan decisions, and let me parse that with a caveat. We know now that over the course of the last several years, there were a great number of things that were done by mortgage brokers and by mortgage companies that may not have been on the level, that there were definitely a good deal of people steered into loans that they should not have had, either on the basis of their credit or simply because they couldn't afford the houses, and the lenders made those loans anyway. That said, if you look at the overwhelming number, the overwhelming amount of data that's already come out about this, the people who tended to be, who tended to get these loans, weren't the people who you would expect. You weren't talking about people who largely, you know, couldn't speak English, or who largely you would believe wouldn't have the means or the education to understand what they were doing. There are some studies that are out there that actually show that the bulk of people or the highest percentage of people who got these loans in some states actually were college educated. They tended to be African American and Hispanic, but among the African American population, for example, in Massachusetts, the most likely individual to have gotten a subprime loan was African American, was college educated, and had an income above $50,000. Now, is that the type of person that you would expect to not know someone with a relatively high income above the median who is also college educated? Is that someone who you would expect to not be educated enough, or to not at least have the common sense enough to read through the terms of their mortgage to know, for example, that you could at least go online, go on Google, go on to a mortgage calculator and figure out how much is going to cost you.
Let me stop you there because I'm college educated, have a couple of degrees, and I'm telling you, and I'm a homeowner, and those documents, you know, that stuff is complicated. I don't care how many degrees you have. If you don't really know or not experienced with the nuances of purchasing property and reading the fine print and understanding the wherewithals and et cetera, it can be very daunting for people, even smart people.
Absolutely. And I don't discount that one bit. There are, and again, I think the proof is in that so many people did have these mortgages who you otherwise may not expect to have gotten them. But I do think that at some point the individual borrower has a great deal of responsibility. I mean, it's buyer beware. If you would not walk into a car dealership and buy an automobile with a loan under terms that you didn't understand, because you know that if you don't understand those terms, you may end up with having the car repossessed. So most of us would not do that. Some of us perhaps would, but most of us would not. Under those circumstances, then, why would you approach the purchase of a home in that regard? If you don't understand, or if you did not understand what the terms were of the mortgage that you were signing up for, this is why you should go to the table with an attorney. This is why you could go to the table with a realtor. This is why it didn't make it. You know, it would. If you don't understand the contract, then okay, that's fine. But you should have an attorney at the table with
you.
If you
don't understand, right?
You know, do your due diligence.
All right.
Do things that make common sense.
Let me move you on to another part of this, because President Bush claims that this plan was drafted after weeks of talks with economists as well as folks. And by saying claim, I'm not suggesting anything other nefarious there. That there were conversations with people involving Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Alphonso Jackson, among others. Still, some economists are calling the president's plan good politics and bad economics. What do they mean?
What they mean is that at the end of the day, this plan has a great possibility of actually prolonging any negative impact that the housing market is having on the economy. I mean, if you look at what's happened, again, we talk about those people who could not buy houses over the last 4 or 5 years because of the run-up in prices. Well, if you keep people in homes that they couldn't afford to begin with, give them some of a reprieve from having to either sell that house or unfortunately be foreclosed on, then those prices remain artificially high. They don't drop like they would if people had to sell them. Now, of course, it's unfortunate if people lose houses, but there's a strong economic argument to be made that what needs to happen to be good for the economy, to get some lending going again, and to get some to spur that part of the economy that encouraged people to keep spending over the last couple of years, which really was the housing market, is that you need to see some of these houses let go, and you need to see some of them come back into the market.
Yep.
I mean, this is a decision that could potentially help very few people, but keep the economy, prolong the negative impact that it could have on the economy overall.
So the question that I have for you then, really simply, is do you think this is going to work?
I think it'll work for a limited number of people. Obviously, something needs to be done to help at least some of the folks that are out there who stand to lose their homes. It's not going to help a ton of people. It won't even help half or close to half of the folks who are in trouble. You'll be very happy if you are one of the people who meet all of the A, B, C, D, E criteria that were laid out in the plan. Overall, is it going to work, and is it going to bring substantive, sufficient relief to what's going on in the housing market? I am skeptical of that. I don't think it's a plan that helps enough people. And then we haven't even begun to talk about what the impact is on the investors who own the securities that are backed by these mortgages, who depend on the income from those high interest rates resetting. We haven't begun to talk about whether or not interest rates are going to be lowered when the Fed meets. This is, you know, it will take some time to know how much of a wave this will make in the larger economy, but I don't believe it's a silver bullet by any means.
Let me bring our conversation to a close. We have a couple of minutes with this. We know what some of the impact will be on people who are mortgage holders and who are homeowners, and you very clearly and adequately describe some of the potential. But what about the people who rent and how this effect trickles down or may trickle down to them, particularly if you're leasing a home or renting a home or renting an apartment building, for as far as that goes?
Well, you could start to see some rents go up, actually. I mean, if you think about what's happened in the housing market over the last several years, rents went down as housing prices went up in many markets because simply there were fewer and fewer renters. Everybody who could buy was buying because they could afford to get a mortgage. And so there was less pressure on the rental market. If you start to see people getting foreclosed on and seeing people lose these homes, then those people flood back onto the rental market. And when rents go up, when there's a higher demand for rental housing, when rents go up, they don't come back down. Renting is a different market from the housing market because, of course, the greater demand there is, the demand for property to buy is always going to be directly tied to prices. On the other hand, when rents go up, rents don't come back down. Rents go up and they stay where they are. You're not going to pay $1,100 for rent, and then next month there are fewer renters, and so your rent comes down to down to $1,000 or $900. It just, you know, rents go up and they stay there. So, you know, this could have a detrimental effect on renters, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we'll have to do, Keith, is we'll have to have you back in about a month, and we'll see where people are at that time and if any opinions have changed. I appreciate you coming on. Keith Reed is an economics reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Keith, thanks again.
Thanks a lot.